On June 12, 2016, a lone gunman walked into the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, and killed 49 people, wounding over 50 more. A new documentary explores the experience of victims with firsthand accounts and police footage of the tragedy. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is Charlie Minn, producer and director of the new documentary 49 Pulses. The film investigates one of the country's worst mass shootings and opens in El Paso next week. Welcome back, Charlie.
How are you?
I'm good. You are extremely prolific, keeping up 2 to 3 films a year, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I almost consider myself a miracle how I broke through. You need some luck in independent filmmaking. You need some breaks. And it's almost like cracking a safe. And somehow I made it, and hopefully I will inspire others in the region to take it upon themselves to find a way to make it in this very difficult field.
Your latest film follows a trend in a lot of your documentaries, which focusing on mass shootings or tragedies having to do with violence in our culture. This one about the Orlando, Florida nightclub shooting. How do you choose these projects? I mean, there's a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of tragedies like this in America. When you heard about the Pulse nightclub shooting, did you immediately know I needed to make a film about that?
It really fell under what I do, which is representing innocent people who had been murdered. Hmm. So in the Pulse case, I waited 8 months before reaching out to the victims, and I was surprised how forthcoming they were, and they wanted their stories told. I know some people out there might say, well, isn't it a little bit too quick, too fast? As long as the victims want their stories told, I think others should respect that. And 20 victims came forward and said, yeah, we want our stories out there, published, and let's meet, let's talk. And sometimes that's part of their healing. It's therapeutic to talk about it.
Did you reach out to people who were not interested in speaking yet about this?
You know, thinking back, maybe one or two politely declined.
So most people wanted to tell their story of that night.
I would say at least whatever that percentage is, 98%.
I understand the therapeutic part. I'm wondering if in the interview process, though, just retelling those stories, such a traumatic event, doesn't trigger other negative consequences in these victims. Were they grappling with basically post-traumatic stress disorder?
The officer that was a first responder who you saw in the documentary, Omar Delgado, he's suffering from PTSD. And as a matter of fact, he said that he was recently terminated from the Eatonville Police Department because he said he had PTSD. Hmm. But for the most part, the interviews went very well. They were very powerful. These victim stories are absolutely incredible.
Walk us through the actual story. So this was several years ago, and at the time, I guess, was called the largest mass shooting.
Yeah, actually 20 months ago.
Modern American history, at least. It's unfortunately since been eclipsed by others. But walk us through what happened that evening.
A killer walked in. It's been now called a hate crime against gay Hispanics. It was Latino night. Mm-hmm. The Pulse is the name of the club. It's been closed because of the tragedy. So this killer walks in. And of course, as you know, Charles, I don't mention the shooter's name because I think if the media followed my lead and kept the killer out of the media altogether, I think there'd be less murders in our country because then killers would now know going in their name will not be mentioned again. But going back to that night, or that morning, I should say, he walks in around 2 a.m.
Right.
And I think he purposely picked that time because he knew perhaps people are tired, intoxicated, caught off guard. And he walks in, and right away there's gunfire exchange between him and police at the entrance. He then makes his way into the bathroom after shooting up the dance floor, and that is where the most critical decision of the night occurred, is why did the police not follow him in to the bathroom?
Where a lot of people were seeking refuge. So
right.
So they were trapped in the restrooms there.
They were trapped. The one question I asked in the film was, why did some people run into the bathroom as opposed to running outside? You would think, what's your instinct? I just got to get out of here. Forget about a bathroom. But then again, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes. It's dark. There's confusion. You're just going to go to the first place that you feel might somewhat be safe.
Mm-hmm. You have some of the 911 calls, too, as well as the firsthand accounts. But part of those 911 calls is the actual shooter calling to talk about what he's done. And without saying his name, He does raise the specter that he is pledging allegiance to ISIS initially, that there was bombs, that there's other booby traps and things on site. But I guess some of that was tested later on, that he may have had some other personal things going on. Was there any determination that he was working or coordinating with a terrorist group?
I think that was window dressing.
Just cover
for what
he was doing.
Yeah, I think that was just him living in his own fantasy world. Certainly a warped one at that. He was on the FBI's watch list twice. He was looked at closely by federal agents, and then he was taken off that watch list. So at the end of the day, I'm not quite sure whether he's attached to ISIS or not. I don't know how much of a difference that makes. We have a deranged individual, and we've had a lot in this country lately shooting up places and killing innocent people. We're trending in the wrong direction, Charles. We have Las Vegas. Look at that. That superseded the Orlando total. And who knows what's next? I don't know if it's a matter of if, but rather when and how many and where.
The access to obvious firearms, I don't remember from the film, but was this a semi-automatic weapon that he was using?
I'd have to actually go back to my notes.
That usually comes up in these tragedies, is just how the killers are able to amass the
and
number
in
of
Vegas,
weapons.
They're looking at that. How did he get all those weapons into his suite? You know, I ignore the killers altogether.
Films are really different. They focus primarily on the victim experience and those who are lost. I know your film, this particular film, 49 Pulses. Tell me about the decision. About halfway in, the film shifts over from telling the story of that night to basically walking us through the 49 who were killed that evening with testimonies from family, photographs, you know, basically not talking about the night, but who these people were.
Yeah, and I think my formula is really, most films are three acts. My films are turning into two acts where it's an examination of the tragedy and then focusing in on who these people were. The innocent victims. Today in the media, you'll see a play-by-play of what happened, and then you'll focus in on the killer, where everything about the killer, where he's from, his hobbies, what he did that night, who he talked to, everything about the killer, who his parents were. I think I'm able to somehow find that balance where I tell the story, I keep the shooter's name out of it, and I focus solely on the victims. Mm-hmm. And again, I'll say this to my grave, and I'll say this till I turn blue in the face. If the media followed my lead, kept the killer's name out of the media, I really think that would save future mass shootings, and that would save lives, because then killers would know going in, oh my goodness, my name will never be mentioned again.
So you believe that some of these incidents are primarily motivated by shooters or killers who know they probably aren't going to survive, but they'll become infamous because their name will live on?
I think killers want the attention. They want their 10 minutes of fame, and the media is shamelessly giving it to them. Mm. And I think they know that they're going to get that attention. The Boston Marathon bomber was put on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah.
And the Orlando killer that night mentioned the Boston Marathon bomber and how he was inspired by him. If the Orlando killer wasn't inspired by the Boston Marathon bomber, would he have carried out the Orlando attack?
One of the interesting wrinkles in your film that your film brings up is that this being a gay nightclub that you mentioned earlier, that it's considered a hate crime now. And you were interviewing in the film, I think, one of the community organizers there who's head of a LGBTQ organization who was really vocal in the early days after the tragedy when the media were not even mentioning that a lot of the victims were gay and that that was probably one of the focuses of the killer, and made sure that we all knew that this was an assault on their community.
Yes, and her name is Patty Sheehan. She's a very outspoken woman. She's LGBTQ also. Mm. So this was something that was very personal for her. She works for the city. And very outspoken in the movie.
So what's the audience for these films and 49 Pulses particularly? What are you? I know you're showing it here in El Paso. You've already shown it in Orlando, correct?
And Plant City, which is halfway between Tampa and Orlando.
So is the audience just people who you think are interested in delving deeper into what these tragedies are all about? Is it a human interest story? Is it all of the above?
I would say all of the above. I mean, I think mass shootings today has, it's entrenched our culture so deeply that how can you avoid it? I mean, it's right in front of our face. I looked at this tragedy, Charles, not so much LGBTQ, but just about humanity.
Sure.
I mean, at the end of the day...
And there was a lot of straight people in this nightclub. It was a very popular nightclub.
Great point. I mean, there's a quote in the beginning of the movie where one of the victims said, "We were looking for a place to go. We saw the Pulse. It was a gay nightclub. We didn't care."
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very powerful quote. And that was given by one of the victims that really spoke well. And yeah, I mean, that club was for everyone.
An unfortunate tragedy, but part of the film's story and part of this story is, as in most of these cases, the community rallies around itself, too.
Yeah, I mean, the blood banks were open. I mean, people were waiting for hours to donate, and the money that was raised, foundations, organizations, groups, and the same thing happened in Las Vegas. So sometimes during the worst moments, you see the best in humanity come out.
You mentioned Las Vegas, and Orlando had been, at the time, the worst mass shooting in modern American history. Of course, it was eclipsed incredibly by the Las Vegas shooting, which is another film you're working on. That's coming out soon?
March 23rd at Bassett.
Right on the heels.
Yeah, and I hope people will come out and watch that film, because before it gets on Amazon, I don't think it's going to play in too many theaters, because I've already had two Las Vegas theaters back out of showing the film. They think
because
that,
they're worried about...
They think that the wound
security
is
security threats or just...
I don't know about that so much, but maybe the wound is so early, and I keep trying to stress to them that the victims want their stories told.
Mm-hmm.
In the Vegas case, the answers have been far and few between. It's such a mysterious tragedy, and...
Yeah, the motivation is unclear.
There's no motive. Here we have a man who... Let's not even call him a man. Let's call him a killer. He goes up into the top of the Mandalay Bay, and he turns his suite into a gun store, and he fires at 22,000 country music fans in an open field. I mean, it's a miracle only 58 people were murdered in that attack, because he's firing away with very high-powered
weapons. The number of wounded was
here.
Also extremely large.
Over 500. So 90% of the people shot survived. So just a horrific event. That's an understatement.
Well, I'll look forward to seeing how those films go. Sounds like eventually they'll be on Amazon as well.
Yes, I have 12 films on there now, and then the Pulse film will eventually get on there soon, and then the Vegas film eventually. So, I mean, that's the trend now, is streaming video. Amazon, Netflix, Hulu has definitely given independent filmmakers another outlet. So the box office is not as critical because you have that backup with streaming video. But with that said, I mean, I'm a kind of an old school guy. There's nothing like the movie theater experience where you watch it on the big screen, you sit down, have popcorn, and you kind of release yourself and you get immersed into a story, whatever that story may be.
Well, you're in town. I know you're a busy man. You're here for the debut this coming Friday of 49 Pulses. Thanks for popping into the studio, Charlie.
You're welcome.
My guest today has been documentary filmmaker Charlie Minn. We've been discussing the 2016 mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, which is explored in Minn's new documentary, 49 Pulses. 49 Pulses opens a week-long engagement next Friday, February 23rd, at the Premier Cinemas at Bassett Place, and Charlie Minn will be in attendance opening weekend to discuss the film with the audience. For more information on the film, log on to 49pulses.com. A final program note, my own film series, The Film Salon, presents Francis Ford Coppola's 1974 conspiracy thriller, The Conversation, this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at Alamo Drafthouse Cinema. The film stars Gene Hackman as a surveillance expert whose latest contract leads him deep into a murder plot. Tickets are just $5. On Film's producer is Lauren Terrazas. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.